I am Patrick Yost, National President of Fraternal Order Police. This is the Blue View. Well, Commissioner, thank you for joining us on the Blue View podcast. We've got a lot of stuff we want to talk about, but before we get into it, would you tell our viewers and listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me on. As you noted, I'm one of the commissioners at the Federal Communications Commission. There's five commissioners that work there, and we're really in charge of administering the nation's communications policy. And increasingly, for the men and women in blue, connectivity and communications is just increasingly vital. So it's so good to have the chance to join you. I have so much respect for the people that do this job. If you talk to the folks that do this, as you do every day, as I try to do as much as possible, these are just people that, in my mind, are heroes. But if you talk to them, they say that they're just ordinary people doing an extraordinary job. It's a very humble group of people. And so the chance that I have at the FCC to play a very small role in helping to make sure that, you know, the connectivity is there when they need it is so rewarding. And there's really no better way, I think, to do a job in DC than to spend as little time inside the Beltway as possible. And so I try to sort of visit every single state in this job. And just real quick, I remember I was actually up in Wainwright, Alaska, which is one of the northernmost cities in the entire country. It's right up there on the Arctic Sea. And I met a police officer there. His name was Officer Mike. And he was originally from South Carolina. And he said he was so excited to get a job in law enforcement in Alaska that he never bothered to even Google where Wainwright, Alaska was. And this is a place that sees full-time darkness 70 days out of the year. And he says he's 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And the 2 weeks that he's off, he flies down to Seattle just to thaw out a little bit. But just one of the heroes that are just spread all across this country that I'm so grateful for their public service.
Yeah, great, great. Well, you know, you led right into it, you know, about the men and women and their dependence on their ability to do our jobs is directly related in a lot of ways to our ability to communicate effectively. And, you know, I can tell you, being 36 years in law enforcement, I went through the whole series of training, of ability to communicate through, you know, in dealing with low bands and then, you know, and then high bands and then where we are today, just technology, the way it's all changed. And it constantly gets better and better. But it also is not without its challenges. So let's talk a little bit about 5G technology and 4.9 gigahertz and how that the need for that to be protected for law enforcement to enhance what we do.
Yeah, look, we have to make sure that public safety has all the resources they need for connectivity. I was reminded of this. I actually had a chance to visit the Louisville, Kentucky Metro Police Department. I actually had a chance to go up in the air. They had this officer, 20-year veteran Brian. He was the lead of the air crew, and he runs the helicopter. He took me up in the helicopter, and we're going all around the city, and he was explaining to me that for a long time, they just had to use sort of commercial cell phones and actually FaceTime to communicate with officers on the ground. So they would turn their FaceTime on. He would turn his FaceTime on. Usually he was low enough to get, you know, an LTE signal. Yeah. But we owe our men and women a lot better than that. And one of the key ways that we can do that is making sure we have the spectrum resources that are available for all of these new wireless connections to matter. As you noted, 4.9 gigahertz is one of the sort of specific spectrum bands that the FCC has been looking at. And one of the things that I've sort of reached the conclusion on over the years is that 4.9 gigahertz has to be a public safety band. And we need to make sure that not only just the incumbent users that are there, but other public safety entities have a chance to get these spectrum assets. Again, so much more data is flowing, video is being recorded. And when an officer needs help, when they need to call in, that call absolutely has to go through. So we have a job at the FCC to deliver, to make sure that the airwaves are there, the spectrum is there, to make sure that these devices work.
You know, the FOP, IACP, IFF, you know, the three, you know, largest police organization, largest administrative police organization, largest fire association, all agree that that FirstNet is a platform that needs to be enhanced and needs to be protected. Like you said, the evolution, you know, we talked about the evolution just in my time. That evolution going forward is probably, expanding at a pace that is far greater than any of us seen and probably can, you know, maybe you have a little more insight, but at a pace that constantly is going to have its challenges as well. Can you talk a little bit about the role of FirstNet in being that designated platform for public safety?
Yeah, the idea for FirstNet originated a number of years ago, And the problem that we were trying to solve is as new and new technologies were getting introduced, there wasn't always this interoperability. And so when you had disaster scenarios, when you had police and fire from different parts of the country coming together, they didn't really have sort of the nationwide network that they could use to be on together, but also when they're separate to make sure it's a robust nationwide network. So Congress effectively stood up this organization called FirstNet, and many, many law enforcement and wildfire crews are now opting in to use that. We need to make sure at the federal level that FirstNet has the resources that it needs to succeed, including on the spectrum front. I've had the chance, again, you know, getting out of D.C. to visit communities that have been hard hit by disasters, hurricanes in Florida, for instance, and you go down there and you see where FirstNet has sort of rushed resources into those communities to ensure connectivity. I've been in California walking the fire line during the Dixie Fire, one of the largest ones a couple of years ago. And again, there's nothing that's more important in those moments than connectivity. And so it's great to see FirstNet stepping in. It's been there for a couple of years. It's continuing to ramp up both its resources and its robustness. And I'm really happy with the trajectory that it's on. Again, we at the FCC just need to make sure that the spectrum resources and others are out there for them to use.
Right. You know, as a commissioner, you have a fine line to walk, and that is making sure that we have what we need and law enforcement be able to do it, but you also have the vying interest of public private sector as well and a profit-driven portion of communications. And, and you know, 4.9 gigahertz is a perfect example of that, one that I know that's being faced right now. You know, our position, Fraternal Order of Police is, and any other organizations as well, is, you know, there's great success in competition. There's great success in bringing business into doing communications because it's going to grow. But at the same time, we're a little bit different in that some of the places where we need connectivity is not necessarily going to be profit-driven centers.
Yeah.
So I really would like to kind of pull it back into, let's take away the whole, you know, economic side of the benefits of the commercial side and really kind of dive into the communities that probably need it most are the ones that are smaller markets. But that doesn't mean that the you know, how vital communications is, public safety and those communities. Let's just use Butler, Pennsylvania as an example. And the challenges that created. It's not a major urban area. It's not a place where it's a high market to be able to create an infrastructure. And that really is the whole premise of creating a nationwide network so that there's some sustainability throughout the nation, regardless of the size of communities.
Yeah, you're exactly right. When we talk about like our biggest urban centers, our business districts, those are places where the economic case for the commercial sector to fill in are always going to be there. But our job is to make sure there's a backstop and a backstop that works everywhere. You're driving your car on a remote highway, you go off the road, you need help. If there's not a sort of a nationwide system, nationwide coverage there, we're in trouble. Same thing with, you know, police officers. When they're out there, any single part of a community, a jurisdiction that they're in, they need to be able to get help. And that's why the spectrum work we do is so important. But there's other aspects as well. We talk about sort of technology continuing to evolve. There's this new generation of, for instance, low Earth orbit satellites that are going up right now. And for generations, we've had the ability to go from a satellite to a standalone dish and get decent service. And the other extreme, we've had the ability to go from a satellite directly to a satellite phone, but it's sort of low bit rate, not really good data. We're on the cusp, basically, of being able to merge those two. And so you could go right to your smartphone from a satellite and have connectivity anywhere that a satellite can see, so effectively anywhere on Earth. That is another sort of new, interesting development that I'd like to find a way to continue to sort of evolve into the public safety space over time. But you're right. In the near term, we have to get this 4.9 gigahertz proceeding across the finish line in a way that respects the needs of our public safety community.
Yeah, no doubt. So, you know, you talk about the accountability. You know, you look at the assassination attempt on former President Trump. Just talk about how FirstNet's platform, there's a lot of discussion about the successes and failures of that event. Now, I don't want to get into that part of it. What I want to do is talk about the technology of it. I had the opportunity to testify before a House hearing. Yeah. And part of my discussion was the fact that there is technology that allows us to be able to speak together in one voice. Now, not necessarily, it doesn't mean everybody's on the same channel, but what it does is it gives us the ability to be able to make sure that when something's emerging, something's happening, that we have the ability to be able to share it. Can you talk FirstNet's platform itself, really is, separate the fact that, that there's a commercial side to this. Really, FirstNet is designed for that specific reason, to be able to take that interoperability of agencies and put them in a way where we're speaking the same language and able to get vital information. And I think Butler, Pennsylvania is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, really one of the biggest events we had in this type of issue set goes all the way back to 9/11.
Right.
You know, we had all of these police forces, fire crews coming in from all over the place, and the inability to have a single, nationwide channel or communication system for them to be able to collaborate. And that was a real challenge after 9/11. And that's sort of part of the genesis of this idea with FirstNet. And you see it in Butler as well. Almost all the time when you have these, major events, you're going to have different types of public safety officials, whether it's Secret Service on the one hand or local sheriff's offices on the other. And you have to have some interoperable system that isn't just stood up for a single event, but it's one that people are understanding on, they're training on, they're using back in their home jurisdictions. And that sort of seamless ability to communicate information is what's so vital. And that's the role that FirstNet has stepped into. And I'm really glad to see the progress that they're making.
So yeah, there's clearly there's a movement now. There's an organization out there that that is talking about building a nationwide network and the operability with it. But really, what it is it's and I want you to help us understand it. It's the commercial side of this, and the wanting to have access to some of the 5.9. Tell me what that controversy is. From your viewpoint of pros and cons on both sides deviating away from what we know is an existing platform that clearly works where it's used to going in a different direction and freeing up some of this bandwidth for commercial use.
Yeah, like a lot of sort of spectrum bands that the FCC deals with, 4.9 gigahertz has a bit of a long and tortured history. So for a long time, it was viewed by the commission as a public safety band, but it was vastly underutilized. There's lots of reasons for that. Some of our rules were outdated. Some of them were complicated. And so we've taken a couple of stabs over the years at trying to get this spectrum out where it's more usable for public safety. Back in 2020, we took one step to try to effectively give it to states and let states decide, including the ability to move it to FirstNet at the state level. The FCC then reversed that decision. We've been seeking comment on it. And now there's a lot of discussion about moving forward again in a way that will enable public safety to use this. And again, I think that's sort of table stakes at the end of the day. We have challenges when it comes to commercial spectrum in this country. We're sort of falling behind in a lot of ways. And that's sort of putting added pressure on 4.9 because the FCC right now isn't licensing a lot of commercial spectrum. And so any spectrum that comes down the pipeline, every stakeholder looks at it and says, look, I'm not getting mine over here. Maybe I can get some here. But again, the North Star for 4.9 has to be that this is public safety spectrum. We need to start there. And we need to make sure always across the board that FirstNet has the resources. Because again, there's just so much more demand coming for public safety. I spent a lot of my time visiting 911 call centers, and we see different technology coming in. We've got text to 911 coming. We've got the traditional calls. People are trying to get to next gen 911 as well to get videos in there. So we're talking about a lot of data that's going to flow in. We need the opportunity to process it. You need the spectrum resources that we've been talking about, but also looking at other ways to continue to support law enforcement. So we've done a couple of things at the FCC. A couple of years ago, we actually stood up a blue alert system where if there was a threat to law enforcement specifically, you could lose the emergency alerting system to send out an alert to a region or the nation about an imminent threat to law enforcement. Obviously, we've just seen far, far too many of those. I think statistics I've seen is that by the end of July alone of this year, it's over 200 police officers that have been shot. I believe it's over 20 that were killed of that. And so we need to continue to provide those resources, including this blue alert that we've been talking about. But the other thing we're doing as well is adding resources. We've stood up a new three-digit number, 988. So rather than 988, which you need to use for certain circumstances, 988 as a nationwide mental health line. We obviously have sort of a mental health crisis across this country.
No doubt.
And so by standing up 988, we can divert some of the calls that would otherwise go to 911 and make sure that we can, in some cases, just send the mental health experts that are out there. And obviously, that's not the solution to every crisis. But if we can insert that as an additional tool in the toolkit, it gives these men and women that are in uniform can both, you know, reserve their resources for the, you know, the emergencies that are required, but make sure we just have a broader response set coming into these situations.
You know, so you gave me a great segue into the next. I want to talk about 911.
Yeah.
And the evolution of it and where we're going with it as well. You alluded to that. But before I do, I just want to say that that FirstNet, I think, is a proven platform. Yeah. My biggest concern is the fact that if we start piecemealing this out, what we're going to have is a piecemealed approach. The whole design, the whole purpose of this was to create a nationwide, as you said, everybody speaking the same language on the same platform, speaking in a way that we can articulate exactly unfolding events when they're happening and be most efficient about it. So our position, Fraternal Order of Police, along with IACP, and you know, we partner with the recognition that FirstNet is the platform that should be enhanced, and we appreciate all the work that the FCC is doing to maintain that. And moving forward, I hope that consideration will be part of it as well. It's a proven platform. If we start, we're going to back up and start reinventing this, then I think we lose important ground. And
You're right. I mean, look, from a technology perspective, we don't need sort of the public safety version of the Tower of Babel, right? We need some sort of single nationwide system. That's what Congress wanted. That's what Congress envisioned. And it's our job at the FCC to make sure the resources are out there so that it can continue to succeed.
Yeah, and that's our success is directly related to our investment that we have in that platform itself.
Yeah,
and so, sure. So I appreciate that. I felt like I needed to say that the work, we didn't get here overnight. We got here because of hard work of a lot of organizations and a lot of individuals that have recognized the importance of it, working with the FCC to get us to where we are. But we still have a long ways to go as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
Just appreciate that. So let's segue into, you know, you mentioned 911 systems there. You know, as a huge evolution that we see coming down the pike. There's so much technology. Technology's changing at a pace that, that might be mind-boggling if you thought about it just 10 years ago. You think about the cell phone you have in your pocket now. You get buyer's remorse because you know it's already outdated. You know, so, the evolution of technology is changing in such a way. But, you know, so rapidly. Well, that also goes for law enforcement, too. Our ability to be able to be very effective in what we're doing, the efficiency of what we're doing, is there are a lot of tools for us to be able to do that as well. And as you mentioned, you know, the ability to be able to have that text, that's how people talk now, having the streaming of live videos so that those officers responding on a scene can see exactly what they're coming into. There's a great deal of value in that in itself. Let's talk about that evolution of the 911 system. You know, we're very dependent on 911, but that platform itself has some problems. It occasionally we lose it. So let's talk about some redundancy that we have there. What do you see coming out of Pike to make that a more reliable, even though it's very reliable, but you know, even so those shortfalls.
Yeah.
What do you see down a Pike that's going to help us fix that and where the evolution is going to take us?
Yeah, we need to continue to drive forward on this. I was listening to another podcast that you're on, and I think you mentioned how when you started out, communications was a squad car radio, and that was about it. And you flash forward
that
to where we are today, and it's unbelievable. But, you know, the technology has to work. There's a couple of things we're doing. One, and this is one that FOP has been active on at the years at the FCC, is what we call location accuracy. So for years, people were used to, you know, pick up your traditional landline, you call 911, and immediately you could know where that call is coming from. But increasingly, a very high percentage of 911 calls, I think some estimates are, you know, 70 or 80%, are coming from cell phones. And for a long time, that was very difficult to locate. We've increasingly been, over the years, demanding more from wireless carriers and technology vendors to give us very specific information about where these wireless calls are coming from, including indoors, which can be more difficult because GPS and other things are sometimes more difficult to work inside buildings. But we've been slowly, faster than some people want, slower than others, increasing those requirements. So right now we have indoor location accuracy that includes, for the first time, vertical. So if you go into a big, you know, office building or office tower and there's a fire, we now have requirements in place that you'd be able to, you know, dispatch somebody to the right floor. And all this is about, you know, seconds, and seconds make a huge difference.
Absolutely.
So there's a location accuracy part of 911 that we're working on, but also, to your point, making the actual 911 system itself more robust. And so we do have fail safes in there. We do have redundancy requirements. When there are outages, we require those outages to be reported to the FCC. But we need to continue to make these, you know, robust, resilient systems. And again, I spend a lot of time in these 911 call centers, and it's just an increasing array of information, whether it's text or videos or calls. And those jobs themselves are also, you know, very difficult, very stressful. I mean, on the one hand, we've got our officers who are, you know, seeing and dealing with some of the most extreme situations that you can see in mankind. And a lot of times those same sort of calls for help are landing on these call centers. So I think, you know, the mental health resources that we need to make available to 911 call takers, in addition to officers, is also an important part of it.
Yeah. So obviously, look, we're transitioning. You talked about cell phones. Most everyone, I don't know a whole lot of people that have landlines unless they're a business. Yeah. So cell phones have become the whole driving force of all of this. Let's talk about that internet protocol, that you know, transition to internet protocol when it comes to 911, maybe a little more reliable. If you can kind of walk us through it and kind of give us some insight of where we are with, you know.
Yeah, we're in the midst of a big transition right now. You know, we call it broadly NG911, but to your point, we're trying to get more IP-enabled services that are available. It's going to open up the suite of different types of technologies that can plug into call centers. One of the big challenges we have right there, frankly, is from a funding perspective. I mean, one of the, as you know, the benefits and the burdens of our country's public safety system is, other than FirstNet, for the most part, this is a state and local initiative. So trying to come up with the funding at the state and local level to make sure that we can upgrade our 911 call centers is important. But when you speak about the future, you know, more generally, you know, one of the points we touched on earlier is, how do we find a way to sort of leverage this new generation of low Earth orbit satellites that are going up that could potentially go right to a smartphone or other sort of law enforcement device and be a supplement from space to make sure that we have connectivity all of the time? That could be a real game changer. At the FCC, we're looking at a couple of technologies, including Starlink, to give them the permissions that they need to push data right to smartphones. So not to the standalone satellite dish anymore, but right to the smartphone. And I think that could unlock a lot of interesting public safety benefits.
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, we've seen businesses all across this country being hacked. They're being hijacked. They're locking down their you know, and paying ransom, just disrupting the systems. What's the protections from 911 being affected?
Yeah, this is a great question. This is one that for a long time I hadn't really focused on, but I did a roundtable at a 911 call center not that long ago, and they had recently been effectively hacked and hijacked, and we're seeing instances of people paying money to unlock their 911 call systems. We have to make sure that at the federal level, we have the resources to defend these in the first place, and then to be resources if it's happening. There is another federal agency, CISA, that deals with cybersecurity issues. And I think, frankly, we need to do a better job at the national level at making sure that our 911 call centers, our public safety communications are protected from this rise in hacking that we see. It's a bit below the fold in terms of public perception right now, but this is a big lurking issue that we need to do a better job on.
Yeah. One question I'm always fascinated by it. I ask this question every time we talk to someone who provides services, who provides products to law enforcement. And that is what's next? What's after 5G?
Yeah.
What can we as law enforcement, you know, just 4 or 5 years down the road, expect our communications to look like?
Well, I think this new trend that we're seeing towards artificial intelligence, towards AI, right, is going to be really good, because we have all these technologies now, but it's not always ease and frictionless for officers, particularly when they're in like really high pressure situations. So I think as this AI technology continues to evolve, it's going to make communications much more seamless, that you'll be getting, you know, prompts to reach out for help. But I think, you know, AI coming into this technology that's increasingly body worn, is just going to make it much more frictionless and seamless in high-pressure situations to communicate, to get the help that you need, and so that it feels like it's less of a sidetrack from your actual work and be sort of much more omnipresent in the background. I think we can do that in a way that's going to deliver great results for public safety.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've spent a lot of time talking to other providers and their own communication tools and their own body-worn camera tools and how AI is going to, that evolution of all of these products is going to make our jobs much safer,
yeah,
much more efficient. And it's mind-boggling to think of just how we're on a cusp of some pretty exciting times, and probably some pretty scary times as well. Yeah. Technology has a way of really kind of, you know, I remember just recently I participated in an event where we talked about AI and how it was going to influence, how it was going to change the world within 5, 10, 15 years, that segment. Now, I got to tell you, I was both excited and terrified at the same time, trying to wrap my head around the changes that are getting ready to happen to us as a nation. And law enforcement is no exception. Our ability to be able to be effective in crime fighting is going to enhance, but at the same time, criminals are going to be enhanced as well. So it's the evolution of policing and law and order. Correct?
Yeah, it's an exciting time. Again, as you pointed, with AI coming in, with sort of, you know, heads up displays, the ability to use, you know, glass goggles potentially to quickly bring up, you know, blueprints of buildings. I think it's a really interesting time. You know, our job at the FCC fundamentally is to make sure that the connectivity is there so that when all these new technologies come online, it actually works at the end of the day. And as you sort of noted throughout this, you know, commercial networks are great. You know, they're going to support themselves where it's needed most. But we have a public interest federal policy obligation to make sure that there is a nationwide network that's there, that's ready to go when an emergency happens, and it's there and ready to go when these new technologies come online. And I'm really excited about where we are. I think it's going to be some really good connectivity developments to come.
You know, I want to thank you. The evolution of FirstNet and AT&T has been a tremendous partner with us, listening to what our concerns are and incorporating into their business model and platforms itself. So, you know, I'm very pleased with the interaction we have with them. But really need to thank the FCC for recognizing that consistency, that platform, is so vitally important. I appreciate all the work that you do, and you and the other four commissioners doing just that, to put at heart the safety of our communities, the ability to be able to get medical help to someone in seconds. And, you know, seconds are a difference between life and death.
Yeah.
And for law enforcement officers as well, police and fire, all public safety. So thank you, you and the commission, for what you do. Let's focus on FirstNet. FirstNet is a platform that should be built out and made reliable. It is, you know, more reliable than it is now, and that's where our investment should be. That's a commercial from the Fraternal Order Police.
So. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything that you've personally done throughout your career, both in service and uniform, and now with the FOP under your leadership. It's been great to see. I think the country as a whole is benefiting both before and now currently from your leadership and from your public service. So thanks, and look forward to continuing to work with you and the organization.
So any final thoughts? Anything you'd like to share with our viewers and our listeners?
Well, just want to express my thanks and appreciation again. You know, the Communications Act, which we're called on to administer at the FCC, it's very long at this point, but the very first provision of it talks about standing up the FCC for the preservation of life and property. And at the end of the day, that's the same job that the men and women in blue do. And so if I can play a very small role in supporting you all from a connectivity perspective, I'm happy to do it. So just thank you again for everything that you do and that your members do.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a large effort, keeping this nation safe, you know, homeland safe, and there's a lot of partners involved in it, and FCC certainly one of those partners as well. We appreciate all the hard work as well.
Yeah.
And to our viewers and listeners back home, I appreciate you tuning into the Blue View Podcast, where we talk about the issues that are so vitally important to the men and women who suit up and show up every day in communities across this country and make a difference in the lives of those we serve. Thank you.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. To get the latest from the National FOP, make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at GLFOP and on Instagram at FOP National. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.